Okay. Well, I'm excited about being back here. Awesome. It's been 6 years. Too long. Lots have happened in the last 6 years. You have a new minister. I love her. I met her at the Unity Convention. I've known Richard for many years, of course. But she is amazing. She radiates love, and she has an amazing intellect at the same time. Amazing blend of intellect and heart. You guys are very, very blessed. Thank you. And I love that song. That song was perfect for what I was talking about today, which is, it's really beautiful what you just did. You guys have, with Richard Medecki, what do you expect? Really good musicians, right? So today we're going to be talking about why do bad things happen to good people with a quantum twist, emphasizing the quantum twist. Now, this question has been around for thousands of years. In fact, hundreds and hundreds of books have been written on it. And in a sense, Unity Church was founded on this question. Because a very bad thing happened to Myrtle Filmer, who was one of the co-founders of Unity Church. She came down with tuberculosis, which in those days was a fatal disease. But she healed herself of it. So was it a bad thing or was it a good thing? And because she healed herself of it, this wonderful Unity Church was formed. Now, I'm sure you've heard this before, but I got to kind of lay out the groundwork before we do the quantum stuff. And she basically did two things which were amazing. First of all, she forgave every part of her body. Not just the diseased part, but every part of her body. Fascinating. She didn't mess around with the disease. She went on everything. But even more importantly, she forgave the negative thoughts she had about her disease. We'll come back to that one because that's a huge one. Now, in order to get a perspective on this question of why bad things happen, we got to look at it in terms of history of religion. And we're going to look at it starting from the Dark Age. That's a good place to start. In those ages, it was really dark. Those are the plague years and all that. That's because God was up here and we were down here and never the twain should meet. We were separated from God. And only if we got God's grace would we get to heaven, unless we lucked out. And, of course, the consciousness reflected that. But the Renaissance happened. Amazing things happened. We were no longer saying God was up here and we were down. We were part of God. Even our bodies were made in God's image. With that beautiful artwork and the human form and the poetry and the philosophers of that time. They were seeing God in everything. They were seeing the symmetry, the beauty, and the order of all life. And it was a beautiful thing. This proved there is existence of God. This had to prove it. Then along about the same time, another group came up, philosophers came into being. And they said, hold on there. Things aren't so hunky-dory. How come little innocent babies get thrown in dumpsters? No all-loving, all-powerful, all-knowing God would allow such an injustice. You have to be wrong. This jousting match went on for a little while, and guess what? The empiricists won. Religion was regulated to faith. Faith is the belief without proof, right? You don't know what's going to happen, so it's faith. And empiricists started science. They wanted something reliable, not faith-based. They want facts. They want science. They want laws of nature we can believe in, not something that's faith-based. And they started modern-day science. And things went along pretty, pretty well for a few hundred years. And then eventually around the turn of the 20th century, which is the 1900s, about the same time that quantum field theory was being done by Einstein and various other physicists, then, also at the same time Myrtle Filmer was healing herself, by the way, of TB, was the emergence of this quantum stuff. Now, the quantum stuff started saying, hold on one second, again. There are no laws. There are no rules. Every rule can be broken. And what happens when a rule or law of nature is broken? That's considered a miracle, right? Sounds kind of religious to me. But let me give you some examples. We talked about this last time I was here. An object can't be in two different places at the same time, right? Wrong. In the quantum, they can be everywhere at the same time, not just two places, everywhere. Einstein's law of relativity, nothing can go faster than the speed of light, the number one thing. Guess what? Quantum entanglement, two electrons can communicate faster than the speed of light, even if they're separated by millions of miles. The biggest one, though, is consciousness itself. This is the new frontier, because physics has decided, or come to the conclusion, that consciousness itself is indeed the quantum field. Because in order to have particles, you have to have consciousness. Now, this is kind of confusing, but I'm going to try to explain it. I'm using some analogies from What the Bleep. Most of you have seen What the Bleep in here. And we all remember that little part of What the Bleep where they were shooting electrons through the slit and they were all lining up in the back wall. And there was a nice, neat line on the back wall. And as long as there was an eye watching the electrons stayed nice and little neat balls. But as soon as the eye went away, the electrons changed into energy waves. So you didn't get just one line, you got 16 lines on the back wall. And what that means is consciousness is needed to collapse energy waves into particles. Okay? So let me explain this a little bit differently than they did in the movie. They didn't do a great job of explaining this. But let's say, for example, you take a couple of pebbles and you drop them into a pond. They produce waves. And then the waves hit each other, and they produce new waves. And they hit each other and produce new waves. Eventually, you get about 16 waves on the back wall. But when an energy particle turns into, when a particle turns into energy, it's everywhere at the same time. That's what they mean when they say energy. It becomes everything at the same time. Here's the dilemma. If there is no consciousness, we wouldn't have a universe. Because you need consciousness to create something out of nothing. In order for their particle to exist, a sun to exist, you have to have a particle. In order for a galaxy to exist, you have to have particles. So there would be no universe. So consciousness is the key in physics today. Consciousness is the key. Some people have even speculated that maybe we're creating the universe every time we look out in our telescopes and it collapses all these energy waves into particles. A couple of physicists from Stanford have suggested that. I think that's a stretch. A couple of physicists from India have suggested that maybe the whole universe is consciousness itself being aware of itself, and that's what's collapsing the particles from energy waves. Personally, I think physics has discovered God. They'll never say it like that, but who is this consciousness that's collapsing the waves of energy into particles? But guess what? We have consciousness. We have that same consciousness that's creating the whole universe within us. And we talked about some of the research. And I'm just going to give you some general examples of this miracles that happen with our consciousness. For instance, the prayer research. Many of you may not know this, but we don't have any energy emanating from our brain that is basically gets beyond your skull bones. So how can praying for people 100 feet away or 1 foot away or even 1,000 miles away work? There's over 250 different studies done on prayer. All of them found, except for a handful, they all came out significant. There is no laws of nature that can account for that. It's one of those quantum kind of things. The same with the meditation research. Those of you who saw the movie What to Bleep, we took 4,000 transcendental meditators into Washington, D.C. and actually changed the crime rates while we were there. Now, we recently did, this is something I haven't told you guys about, we recently did a project at the Unity of Dallas. We had 800 people doing these quantum techniques we'll be talking about a little bit later on, and we were able to reduce the crime rates there. Huge. Now, One of the big questions people have, when you went to Washington, D.C., you must have wanted or intended to change the crime rates, right? Because intentions are big nowadays. Do you realize we never once thought about crimes while we were there? All we did was get out of the way. We simply sat there and meditated. We let the divine flow through us. Because when you want something, what are you attracting? Lack. You don't have it. When you want something, you're attracting lack. So what we did, we simply did nothing. Got into the meditative state. Got out of the way. Let the divine flow through us. Okay? Now, so we have this unbounded quantum force within us. How come we're not living it as well as we wish we were? And this is a big question. One of the questions I've taught over 20,000 people from Unity Church in my seminars, and one of the questions I always ask them in the Unity seminars, how many people have dreams that have come true? And usually about half the class has had dreams that have come true. And the other half has had deja vu experiences. So if we've had that kind of ability on this side, can you imagine the kind of ability we have on the other side? We must have known the messes we were going to get ourselves into before we even came here. Maybe they weren't messes. Maybe they were a mission. Maybe there's some reason for these negative things. Betty Eady. First I want to get to this idea that we are blocked. I want to talk about the blocks here for a second before I get to Betty Eady. The blocks are important because we must be blocked from knowing what's going to happen. And in related to this, one of my favorite psychics from all time is a guy named Vincent from New York. And I met him when I was 17 years old. And we had a little walk. He was visiting from New York City. We lived in upstate New York. And he came and he told me that I was going to be doing some far-out research on psychic stuff. And he wanted me to send him a copy of the research. Now, here I am at 17 years old. The last thing in the world I want to do is be a scientist. I have all these raging hormones. I don't want to sit around and be a scientist. And Vincent was amazing. They took him into a hospital in New York City and because to help him diagnose people that they couldn't figure out what was wrong with them. And he was able to tell, 100% of the time what was wrong with them. Then they tried him on horse races. He got every race right, 100%. I've never seen a psychic come even close to that. Unbelievable. So 10 years later, I had finished graduate school and I was doing all this wonderful research. And I thought, I got to go talk to Vincent. So I called up and tried to find him. I couldn't find him anywhere in New York City. And eventually I was able to get a hold of his brother, which really amazing because I'm thinking, this is a world-class psychic. How come nobody's heard of him? What happened in the last 10 years? He had died of AIDS. He couldn't see his own stuff. I bet everybody in here is really, really good at figuring out other people's stuff. But not so good at figuring out your own stuff. Right? We are blocked. Okay, which brings us back to why. Why? And I think, personally, there's several different answers to this question. And if on the other side, we already knew it was going to happen to us before it happened, we must have chosen these things in the first place. And maybe they were part of our mission here. This idea of a mission is important. Betty Eady, in her book, Embraced by the Light, and she's written a couple other books, it was about the life after death experience. I think you had somebody recently talked about life after death. And she had the classic case. She sold over 10 million copies of that book in the first year. And huge. But anyway, she was hooked up to instruments. It was after the operation. But they died, it was easy to see based on the instruments that she was definitely dead. And She left her body. And she went and visited her husband with the kids, and he was having problems putting the kids to bed. Then she went and visited the doctor. And later on, she was able to recant to everybody those experiences to help legitimize the experience, okay? But here's the interesting thing. She went to the light. And when she goes to the light, she meets Jesus. And first question she asked Jesus, I love this. Why do bad things happen to good people? And Jesus just laughed. He said, they see that little bum down on the street? She said, yeah. And in about 15 minutes, a very famous lawyer is going to walk by. Their eyes are going to meet. And the lawyer is going to completely change his life around and decide to devote himself to helping humanity. The bum isn't a bum. He has a mission. We all have missions. And maybe the negative things that we go through are going to help us in our mission. If we become a drug addict and we get cured, we cure ourselves, we can help other people with their drug addiction much better than if we'd never been a drug addict. The thing about the other side is there is no pain over there. If we decided we wanted to help out humanity, obviously we decided to come down here to do something about it. We're going to plunge headfirst into it. Hey, I want to find out about this painful stuff. I want to help other people with their pain. Makes sense to me, right? Makes perfect sense to me. We came down here to experience the human experience so we could help other people with their situations. I bet you everybody in here, from especially Unity Church, feels like they're on a mission. But there's one more thing about this. One more thing. Maybe this is the quantum thing. But this is something that, by the way, I think Myrtle Fillmore gave us a clue about. Because she forgave her negative thoughts about her disease. Why did she do that? Maybe what she was doing was learning to love the dark side. Because love isn't complete if it's only light. Because without darkness, you can't have light. We, in order to have complete love, need to love everything, which is what you were singing about. And it's like a mom with a baby. If the baby does something wrong, it doesn't matter. It's okay, I love you anyway. This is what we need to learn in the human sphere. I think we came down here to love the dark side, to love our human side. And this is the great challenge we have here. I think one more thing that Myrtle Fillmore did that was really incredible, that she forgave every part of her body, not just forgave the diseased part, but by putting your attention on different parts of the body, you're actually, in a sense, stimulating the acupuncture system or the energy system in our body. And I think in some ways you could consider her the first, by doing that, the first energy worker here in the Western world. But this idea, again, that we can heal ourselves through love, through loving our dark side, is huge. Because this is what we can do. In Myrtle Fillmore's case, her disease became her healing. In Myrtle Fillmore's case, her disease became her healing. Huge. We can do the same thing. We can do the same thing by loving the part of us that's diseased. My mother, she came down with colon cancer that spread to her liver, lungs, and bones. She was given just 2 months to live. But she decided not to go out on the cancer's terms. She wanted to go out on her terms. And she did the anti-cancer diet, the Ayurvedic herbs from India, which, if you know anything about Indian, those herbs are amazing. They have 1/10 the cancer rates there than we do here. She did, of course, prayer, meditation. I'd take her to the hospital all the time, and Everybody else that had her disease was a basket case. Nobody even knew she was sick. She did everything on her bucket list, went to Thailand, everything. And one point she told me, cancer was the best thing that ever happened to her because she learned to love life fully every second of the day. She learned to love life fully every second of the day. So what we've seen is that we have that same miraculous force that created this whole universe out of nothing within us. It's within our consciousness as well. And through this consciousness, we're not separated from God. And even science has to admit something's going on nowadays. So we've come full circle. We're back with God again. And we are making a difference. Just the other day, I saw a poll on gay marriage. Just two months ago, 65% are now for gay marriage. 2 years ago, 65% were against it. We are indeed making a difference. Our collective consciousness is changing. And we should thank ourselves for doing this. When you come together and meditate like we did, we are making a difference. It's huge. And in closing, I want to cite one of my favorite poets, T.S. Eliot. In the beginning, we shall not cease from exploration. And the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started from. And then we'll know the place for the first time. Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much.